You are listening to the News Project podcast for the week of June 8th, 2020, brought to you by GNAT TV. This podcast brings you these stories. The local economy starts to reopen. The upcoming primary heats up. And BBA's graduation ceremony in the COVID age.
Slowly and incrementally, area towns are starting to see businesses and public facilities, from recreation parks, restaurants, retail shops, and others, begin to gingerly reopen, many with rules and guidelines around face masks and social distancing in place. At its meeting Tuesday, June 2nd, the Manchester Select Board made it possible for shops and restaurants to require their customers wear face coverings. And as the traditionally busy summer tourism and visitor season approaches, many businesses are trying to thread the needle between being open in a safe manner while making the experience of shopping, visiting, or dining at their establishment an enjoyable experience. Restaurants in Manchester will have some leeway about outdoor dining to make up for the indoor seating they can no longer use beyond the 25% of capacity they are allowed. They'll be able to exploit their nearby outdoor space and parking spaces to place more tables. But that still leaves some restaurant owners trying to thread that needle. We talked with Costas Fifas of Christo's Pizzeria and Pasta and Wesley Stannard, a co-owner of the Moonwink restaurant, about planning their way through the coronavirus pandemic.
So far, we were doing just curbside pickup and delivery. So from now on, I think we're going to start, we're going to put like four or five tables outside here, some umbrellas and some plants to separate from the street, and we're gonna be serving outside regular, like everything. As far as I know, for inside dining, I think we're gonna be able to do 25% of the store. And I hope all this ends and we come back to the normality as we all know.
Probably the biggest difference is that we're not really seeing people inside the restaurant currently. We do have about 10 seats outside that we can utilize, and it is summer, so that's a solution for now. When it starts to get colder outside or if it's raining, we don't have much of a plan other than just doing takeout. So throughout the whole thing, we never closed. You know, we've been doing takeout the entire time, bringing food out to people in the parking lot, taking credit card numbers over the phone, which works, but it's really a pain in the butt, to be quite frank. If we open seating inside, as it stands right now, we're required to take people's temperature at the door. So for us, it's just my wife and I working here, and we don't really have the manpower to do that, you know? We both have to be in the kitchen all the time or take orders, so we probably won't reopen until we don't have to do that, you know? And I don't know when that will be. I mean, what they're talking about now is 25% occupancy, taking a log of people's private information to do contact tracing, and taking temperatures at the door. Personally, 25% in our restaurant is just one table, four seats. So, you know, it seems like it's not quite worth it for us to reopen under those guidelines. I'm hoping halfway through the summer they come up with a new plan. And slowly start to transition back to a normal, you know, to how it was before. But it's really hard to say at this point what's going to happen, you know.
Other businesses are also getting a long-awaited green light to reopen. Among them are gyms and fitness centers, as well as hair salons. We stopped by the Manchester Gym where we met up with Dana DeSalt, one of the owners, and Dawn Taylor, the owner of Belladonna. Well, yeah, so how does it feel to have the gym reopened again?
Oh, it feels amazing. It's so nice to welcome everybody back that we haven't seen for 2.5 months and just be able to interact with people again. It's been fantastic. So a couple things that are different. We've taken some of the cardio equipment out of commission just so that we can have everybody spaced appropriately upstairs, so we have a few less machines to use. We have some, you know, barriers at the front desk. You are required to wear a mask when entering and leaving the facility and walking around. However, if you're engaged in vigorous or physical activity, you don't need to wear a mask at that time. We've always been very clean in here, and the members have always helped us with that. So it's still wipe down the machines before you use them, wipe them down afterwards, and just be aware of your surroundings and practice social distancing within the club. We have abbreviated hours right now for a little while. We're open 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. where normally we would close at 8. That's going to allow us to do more deep cleaning in the evening after we've closed. Currently, some of the classes are not taking place in the facility live. We're still doing our virtual classes. We anticipate starting some of them next week, but again, the state has given us some restrictions on what types of classes we can have, so we don't have all of them up and running yet.
Well, we are only allowed 25% capacity, so I have a note on the door that stop, and please wait till we let you know it's safe to enter, and then we are requiring masks. It's optional, but we decided we require them. The operators have to wear a mask or shield. You cannot come in until our previous client leaves. So, because we can only have 4 at a time in the shop, myself, my one employee, and each of us can have one client. After each client leaves, we then we've gotten into a routine. We've wiped down the handles of our chairs, the dryer they sat at. I then go and do the light switch for the bathroom, the doorknob, the handles that they wash their hands with, and I even do the toilet flush. And then any other surface they may have touched, the desk chair. If they use a pen, they keep it. We don't want you putting it back in the holder. And it's just, and then when they leave, we do all that, and then we signal the next client to come in. It's a scary time for people, so I'd rather they feel we're doing too much than not enough, you know. And so the clients have been wonderful and, you know, cooperative, and I think this has helped, just having it on the door right above the handle, so they go, oh, we're, you know, and yeah, so we're succeeding to follow all the proper protocols.
And it feels good to be reopened again.
I am so happy to be back to work. I mean, I've been doing this for 34 years, and I love my job. I've missed it, and I've missed my clients terribly. You know, and they've missed us. I mean, it's my constant quest to beautify Vermont one head at a time. And they've come in with some pretty bad roots, and when they leave, they look great, and that makes me feel good. Yeah.
While some businesses anticipate a slow summer season until restrictions, such as a 14-day quarantine period for visitors from out of state, are relaxed, which may be coming soon, along with more general concerns about traveling are eased, some businesses are finding their offerings in greater demand than usual. One of them is Bat and Kill Bicycles, where the inventory has been hard to keep up to normal levels, said owner Barrick Evans.
Yes, bicycles are the new toilet paper. I stole that. Somebody put that in an article. Well, it's a good thing to do, socially distant. Get outside. You know, people think they'll walk, but they want to mix it up. And biking is great. I know that, you know, I have customers like my wife, who's getting an e-bike, because when she returns to her job in New York City, she's not going to go on the subway and wants to commute by bike. So, you know, that's a 6-mile. New York is very hilly, so e-bike seems ideal, and we've sold a lot of e-bikes. Kids' bikes, I think getting kids out of the house is a popular idea right now. So, those are some of the first ones to go. You know, and then for kids that are a little bigger, sort of entry-level mountain bikes got chewed up quickly. And in addition to the demand, it got exacerbated because factories closed when the workers had to go home because of COVID. It's a supply line problem. And even though now that the factories are starting back up, you know, for the parts factories to build the parts to get them, to the bike factories to finish the bikes and send them here, it's like a 2-month lag.
Manchester's town manager, John O'Keefe, gave us an overview of where things stand from a townwide perspective.
Are there any issues or concerns you have as the town, you know, starts to reopen? And a follow-up question I was going to have was, do you have any concerns about the economic fallout, you know, from the lost local option tax revenue that I'm assuming will be significantly less than last year's? But anyway, I just thought in general, what are you guys thinking about or keeping your eyes on as the town, you know, stores, restaurants, et cetera, reopen for business?
So we closed out the books on local option sales tax and meals and rooms tax for the current fiscal year, which ends June 30th. But we always book one quarter behind. So we've closed out the books. The numbers actually for fiscal year 2020, which ends in June 30th, are actually higher than 2019. That relied on stronger returns though in the first three quarters. We did see some decent sales tax numbers in the fourth quarter. Meals, rooms, and alcohol, though, were probably largely supported through alcohol. I mean, there are some encouraging signs coming out of Montpelier as the governor announces more actions. I think one of the risks that we have is that a lot of our tourism population comes from areas that are more heavily impacted by COVID-19. New York, Connecticut, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Pennsylvania. I mean, we're talking about some of the biggest areas in the country that have been impacted by COVID-19. So I think that's one risk that we have. You know, on the other side, opportunity-wise, we're seeing all of the elements of a housing boom starting to come into place. As we talk to realtors, construction folks, I talked to a surveyor today that said his business is going really, really strongly right now. And also I talked to an appliance business this past week that said that their numbers for the current fiscal year are higher than the previous year or calendar year. And these are all things that are pointing to people moving up here. I haven't heard anything from the schools yet. I am going to plan to reach out to them and see what they've gotten for interest. But I've heard anecdotally that the schools are getting interest from new parents that are thinking about sending their kids to school in Vermont, especially up on the mountain where there's a lot of second homeowners that might be actually looking to move up here. So it'll be interesting to see if we're going to see sort of the same thing that we saw after 9/11, whether we're going to see you know, a significant bump in full-time residents and housing. So we'll see what happens there. As far as reopening, you know, we've had a lot of conversations with businesses, especially restaurants. I've talked to Firefly, Depot Burger, Christo's, Cilantro, Mystic Cafe, Union Underground, and Bonnet and Main, who have all reached out to us asking for guidance on how they can take advantage of some of the leniency that the town has created or opportunities. So for example, Christo's Pizza, we've given them permission to detour pedestrian traffic into the parking spaces in front. So we'll lose a couple parking spaces, but detour pedestrian traffic into the road and set tables on the sidewalk for the short term, because you know all of their space right now is inside. And we've also talked about opportunities that might be outside in the back with them as well. But I think one thing that we're seeing, I think Michael from the Old Tavern said it best, that outdoor seating was already really hot, but now I think it's gonna be probably the restaurant story of 2020 is gonna be outdoor seating.
The spigot may keep on turning to reopen the state's economy, conditioned on the number of COVID cases remaining low and testing and hospital capacity in place. We'll be looking at other areas like the arts and the creative economy, as well as childcare and summer camps, as those sectors seek to find ways to reopen safely. For the GNET TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. Voters in the Democratic Party primary election for the Bennington 4 State Representative District will have some choices to make when they head to the polls or mail in their ballots for the primary that will be held on August 11th. Cynthia Browning and Kathleen James represented the two-member district that includes Manchester, Arlington, Sandgate, and most of Sunderland this past term, but there will be a few changes this time around. Representative Browning, who has served in the legislature since 2007, will be running as an independent this year, instead of on the Democratic Party line. She will therefore not be involved in the August primary, but will be on the ballot in the general election in November. Representative James, a political newcomer when she ran for the seat in 2018, is seeking re-election. Seth Bongartz of Manchester is looking to return to the State House, where he served as a state representative and also as a state senator back in the 1980s. James and Bongartz have announced they are running as a team. They have a challenger, though, Jamie DeFore, a local business owner who's making her first run for public office. We had a chance to discuss her reasons for running and her stance on some of the issues that were important to her.
So, what prompted you to throw your hat in the ring for this election for the state representative?
Well, to be honest, it was something I've always considered doing. And I was pretty much prompted by a couple of other people. So, Jamie, you should do this. And I think because they like things that I've said, things that I've done along the way. You've known me for a long time. You know what I'm about. And it just seemed like, okay, this is the right time to do it. So, you know, we have a lot of different problems going on in the area that never seem to get resolved. And one of them is a severe housing shortage for affordable housing for people that want to work and live here. And I think that that ties in really well with the fact of being a small business owner. I struggle with that as well. And I recently hired another two people, and they're not from around here. Because nobody is able to afford to live here, first of all. And secondly, you know, the kids that go to school here, they pretty much leave when they go to school. If they go further, they don't stick around. So we have a severe shortage of people. And with my experience as a small business, which you know, I've struggled just like every other business. We need to focus more on the smaller brick and mortar businesses that are still here and the ones that are also doing the service industry. They're really struggling. We don't have enough people to do what needs to be done. We do have a habit amongst different business owners of regurgitating bad employees. They get passed around and they go from business to business, and we've all seen that, and it's not to call anybody out specifically, but we need to fix that.
How do you think we should best go about fixing that? What would be some of the policies you'd like to see put in place to advance?
Well, one of the things I'm concerned about is how much I could actually do with that, because I do understand a little bit of how things work up at Montpelier. It comes down to what kind of committees that you can get yourself involved in that could have something to affect change. I think we need to find a way to make it financially viable for people to be able to stay here. Of course, no one wants to stay and live in their mom's basement. They want to be able to move out on their own. They want to do their thing as well. So that is one of the things why I wanted to focus on the shortage of affordable housing. We really don't have it. And I think Manchester, if I'm not mistaken, 54% of our population is not from Manchester, let alone Vermont. And I think we have to rationalize that we're losing people that are from here, that might stay here, that could work, and we need to find another way to get people to be here.
One of the things the legislature was working on before COVID-19 kind of took over everything and sucked the oxygen out of the state house and everything was Act 250 reform. What you're saying sounds to me like you would like to see that effort continue and vision pushed forward, because they've been working on that now for about the past 3 or 4 years and haven't been able to come up with a final plan to.
No. I think we if you look at overall what's been being done up at Montpelier, there's a lot of stuff which slows the process down. I've seen it with my friend Chris Bates with what he's been doing with the fish and wildlife and water pollution with Lake Champlain, all important issues, environment's important issues, but it's not solving our affordability problem. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the blank checks that have been being written now for people to be on unemployment or some sort of assistance because of the COVID crisis, we're gonna have to recover from that. And we're not gonna recover from that if our tax base is being shipped out of state, meaning, if you look at Manchester specifically, where I would be representing, a good portion of the money that comes in barely stays here. And it really does go back to corporate headquarters. The employees don't get paid very well to keep them to want to stay here. And often if they need somebody better, they have to fish further. They have to look for someone out of state. We really don't have anybody here that wants to realize, hey, we have a quality of life here. That's why a lot of people came here. Most people, including myself, I didn't come here for employment. I came here because I just wanted to get away from it all. Obviously, Vermont was a little bit more expensive than I initially thought 16 years ago when I moved back. But, you know, I found something to do, started a business. And we have a lot of entrepreneurship here, but that's the other side of the coin because we are all interconnected. So the building industry took a big hit over the last several months because of COVID-19. We need to find a way to help them. Every one of the major contractors is slowly getting back up to speed. But first, even with my business, two-man crews only. You couldn't do this. We can't go into habited homes. I have one client in town that I can't do anything for yet because we're really not allowed to go into homes that are full-time occupied. And let's face it, COVID-19 is a learning process for everybody. We don't know enough about it. I would prefer to err on the side of caution, but we also have to realize that I think we're letting people fall behind, because if you take the example that happened up in Winooski, which was significantly a immigrant population that wasn't really up to speed on the education of COVID-19 and also the language, we have the same problem here. We have people that live in a completely different world when they go home than where they work in. They don't get the information they need. They don't feel included. A lot of the people that are local and been here multi-generational, whether they were born here or not, they all complain about one thing: can't afford to be here. I'll go shopping up in Rutland or in Granville or Bennington. And we have two great grocery stores right here in town. I think we need to find a way to better educate people. Like, listen, you know, you go all the way down there, you're not keeping it local, which has always been the argument. But to rationalize, you know, you drive your car 50 miles to go and get a better deal for grocery shopping, you're not saving any pennies.
Okay. I just want to pivot to one other point. I mean, obviously in the last week or so, there's been a lot of attention paid to police reform and racial bias and that sort of group of issues around the Black Lives Matter movement. Just wondering what your takeaway is on that. Do you feel that policing in Vermont does need to have a kind of closer look at to see if there are any racial biases at play here, or what's your feeling
on that? Vermont has a significant amount of racial bias, and it's to all groups, all different groups of minorities suffer from that. And again, I think that people are not getting the message that it's going to eventually affect them. I think Neiman Marcus said it best: if you don't stand up for other people, eventually there's no one to stand up for you. So yes, racial bias. Like, I sold my laptop yesterday. I had a black gentleman that bought it from North Bennington. And he pulls into my driveway and he's in a different world when he comes here. And he's like, you could see his hesitation. And I'm friendly with him. Of course, we're all wearing masks, so that adds a little bit to the complication of an interpersonal contact or an internet sale. But it's kind of sad, because he's probably run into situations and, you know, offered him something to drink so he could sit down and look at the laptop if you're sitting at the table outside. And you try to be warm and friendly and welcoming, but you can see they're not, there's like, it's almost like walking into the boss's office. You don't know how to react. You try to just be quiet and say nothing, and they feel lesser than you. It's not right. Doesn't matter what I have or don't have, I'm no bigger or better than you are, and none of us are better than anybody else. But we do see that game played up here often, maybe not intentionally, but it does happen. The argument that we've seen is so many people are like complaining about out-of-staters coming up here because of the COVID-19 crisis, possibly using our resources or bringing the disease or the virus up here. These people are also our bread and butter. It's where our money comes from. And they're right away, it's another form of racial bias when you start calling out the people that are wealthy because you don't have it. That's where it starts. That's where systemic racism starts. Oh, we can self-police. We don't need a lot of police. but we also need to make people feel welcome and not feel singled out and not treat them worse. I see it sometimes with employees as well. It trickles down. You see someone that makes more money feel like they're bigger and better than someone that makes less money. That's wrong.
On GNAT TV's website, GNAT-TV.org, you can find an earlier interview we did with Mr. Bongartz, and we will also be holding one with Representative James shortly. We're also hoping to have an online forum or discussion with the three candidates sometime in July, before the primary, to give the candidates a chance to explain their positions on the key issues. The top two vote-getters from the primary will go on to the general election in November and face Cynthia Browning and perhaps other independent candidates. As of now, no Republican candidates have announced for the district. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. As several people said, it was a different kind of graduation ceremony. Byrne Burton Academy held its 187th commencement ceremonies on Friday, June 5th, but not on the familiar grounds of its campus. Instead, the ongoing COVID-19 emergency prompted a move up to the Browning Mountain parking lot, where there was space for everyone to park and spread out. There was a different and more relaxed feel to it, but it was still centered on the graduates of the 175 members of the class of 2020. We caught up with school headmaster Mark Tashian shortly before the start of the ceremony.
It's different. Right from the start, what we wanted to do is something different, bigger, create its own experience. And that's what we've done, starting with our parade, going through diploma ceremonies this week, and culminating in this. It's different, it's loud, it's noisy, and it is what it is. And that way our graduates don't have to think about what they're not getting. What they're getting is a week of graduation. It's better than I even imagined. It's so much fun.
The graduation ceremonies had actually begun more than a week before with a parade through Manchester. Then, from June 1st to June 4th, graduates were honored individually and in small groups as they came to the campus to accept their diplomas and ring the school's famous bell to mark the moment.
Good? Three's good? All right. What a crazy contraption.
Then, on Friday, June 5th, a large crowd of graduates, friends, and family members converged on the Bromley Mountain parking lot for one last celebration.
However, it's a beautiful day and a beautiful scene that they created for us, so thank you to everyone who made this possible.
Danielle McKenzie gave the class a salutatory address.
I just wanted to say that I'm proud to come from a community who stands for justice and social change. A community that is not silent, a community who will never be silent in times like these. On a lighter note, we did it. This has been an incredibly strange and stressful time for everyone, adjusting to online classes and having to keep up our spirits and academic motivation. I'd first like to address my speech and composition class. I know we were cut short, and I'm very excited to be giving this last speech to you. However, there's definitely a few more people here than the last time I spoke in that class.
Leah Mowry followed with the class valedictory address.
You are the star of your show with personal goals and aspirations that orient you. It's easy to get wrapped up in our own little worlds, but eventually we realize how much we rely on the people around us. Hopefully, we all have a best friend like Mater in our life. Someone who will go tractor tipping with us, teach us to drive backwards, and tow us out of the ditch when we get a little too cocky. Maybe this person is there to make bad decisions with you, but turns out there's no better person it could be. I think we've all had a Sally. Maybe it was a love interest, a voice of reason, or a welcoming heart. Someone who adds sweetness to your life and takes you on new adventures. They look out for you and push you to better yourself. Your Sallies may come and go, but try to always have one by your side.
Faculty member and Spanish teacher Sue Ritchie, herself a Byrne Burton graduate from 1974, and who's retiring after this school year, had some final pieces of advice for the graduates.
We have done it, we did it, and we will continue to persevere. So what I hope for you is that you take this adaptive spirit, this persevering spirit, this positive spirit forward with you as you navigate the new paths ahead of each of you. I hope that you will all experience and embrace a similar sense of curiosity and open-mindedness as you navigate your new paths.
Instead of the graduates coming forward to accept their diplomas, their names are read out over the PA system to cheers from the audience. We spoke with one of the graduates, Hannah McArdle.
I think it's kind of surreal, like high school already sort of ended for us. We had our last day, but now it's like we have to come back together again to really finish it, which I think we've done a pretty good job of, and I think we've turned it into something pretty special, given the circumstances.
And then, to the strains of pomp and circumstance, the newest of the school's alumni headed into the summer, having finished their high school years in a way they never expected. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit GNAT.tv.